herzlich willkommen zu All Lost in the Supermarket. Gespräche mit TU Braunschweig Alumni und Arbeitgebern zum Arbeitsmarkt jetzt und in der Zukunft. Mein Name ist Knut Eilborn. Ich bin Mitarbeiter der Servicestelle Alumni und Career. Wir sind der Podcast der Studierenden und Alumni der TU Braunschweig, die Arbeitswelt von heute und morgen erklärt und euch eure Möglichkeiten aufzeigt. It is 9 a.m. on a beautiful summer morning, and I think we've never hit the studio this early. Good morning to all of you out there, and good morning to my two early bird guests for today's episode, which are Tatjana Pier and Henning Feiertag.
Good morning to you too.
Whose last name I already love. For all non-native speakers, Feiertag translates into holiday. So, it's not a holiday for us, it's a working day, and we have an interesting and exciting topic to talk about. We'll come to that in a few moments. Great having you two. I will start by sharing with you some data that I retrieved yesterday afternoon. This July, our career service website had 1,460 visitors who spent an average of 9 minutes on the website. The countries of origin of the visitors, in order of quantity, would be Germany, the United States, UK and Canada. However, whereas we only had 7 visitors from Russia, these visitors had an astonishingly high click rate of 201 clicks per visit. For comparison, Germans had an average click rate of 7. So, you know, I looked at these data and I shared with you earlier that so much of that is not easy to interpret. But I found this very striking that those few people, you know, were astonishingly inactive. What do we make with that? And why am I starting like this? Well, why don't you introduce yourself by sharing with us what it is you're doing, who you are? Tatjana, would you please start?
Sure, Knut. I originally come from St. Petersburg, from Russia.
Ah, one of the 7.
I didn't visit your webpage. I studied business information technology there and also started my career in software development. Around 13 years ago, I moved to Germany for a new study program for international students. It was also an IT study program, but I already used it as a transition to data science. And since then, I've been working in this interesting field. First in the research, I got a PhD from a collaboration of Volkswagen Research Unit and Braunschweig University, and then in the industry. In my current role as a data scientist at Volkswagen Financial Services, I'm working on many practical applications of AI, but my current focus, and I would say my personal interest, is generative AI and also now agentic AI.
You might have to explain these terms to us later on, but let's move on to Henning for the time being. Who are you?
Yeah, I'm Henning, 30 years old. For my bachelor's degree, I studied business information systems, I think the same as Tatjana. I studied in Hanover at the Leibniz University of Applied Sciences. This was a dual degree with a company, so every semester I had 3 months of work and 3 months of studying. After that, I spent 1 year abroad working for Volkswagen Financial Services. And after that, I started at TU Braunschweig with my master's degree also in business information systems. And in parallel to that, I continued to work at Volkswagen Financial Services as a data warehouse engineer. And for 3 years now, I'm working full-time as a cloud data engineer. So, complementary role to the data scientist, I would say.
Well, I just love these role expressions, these names for the types of job you're doing. And they actually sound very much alike. We'll be talking about the differences and how these roles overlap later on. Let's get the big picture first, shall we, by having you explain to our listeners what data science actually is and why big data in today's world are so important. Who would like to start?
Yeah, for me, data science is a process of extracting information and knowledge from data, both big and small data. So it's not just always big data. And yeah, this new or yet this undiscovered information supports decisions. That's a key thing for me. And also for analyzing this data, you don't only use AI, you use classical statistical models, but you can also use simple rule-based systems. So it's not just everything AI, as we learn maybe later today. Yeah, and of course, in the end, this process of generating new information should serve the purpose of making new discoveries or making processes more efficient.
Anything to add to that, Tatiana?
Yeah, I think data science is indeed about generating some insights from available data and making use of it, making use of these insights, like making predictions, understanding website visitors' behavior, I don't know, predicting traffic jams, predicting the weather, you name it. Data is everywhere. Data describes our world, and I think it also explains why it is so important.
Okay, and you know, since you are working for the same employer, the Volkswagen Financial Services, an example from closer to home?
Actually, if we take a look at financial services and at our company in particular, almost all of our products consist of data. So we are not producing cars, we are offering loans, we are offering maintenance contracts. This is, in fact, data, right?
True. So you're looking at that, and it's pretty much a big chaos at first, I suppose, because we're looking at large data sets, probably, even though Henning said, well, not all the time.
Yeah, it might be that you just have a small data set with relevant data, and you want to extract the information from there. So it might be just 10 or 20 data sets. Like you just said in the beginning, you have 7 people from Russia you're interested in because their click rate was higher, and that's all the data you have to work with and to deduct any information from. So this small data set might also be important. But of course, because you have the larger picture, you can figure out, okay, what makes them special or makes them different.
Okay. Now, you both gave away your official job titles. Enlighten us. There's data scientists, there are data analysts, data warehouse engineer, you said. machine learning engineer. There's so many different job roles. Can you give us an intelligible definition for these job roles, and how do these people interact with one another?
Yeah, I think, first of all, if you ask many persons, you get many different definitions of job titles. And also at every company, every team, it comes down to the individual persons, how they live up to their roles. For me, it's kind of on a spectrum or a scale where you have a lot of analysis, maybe even mathematical stuff that you do. And on the other hand, software engineering, programming, and so on. And I think all these roles make up a good mixture of those.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think it might help to imagine it on a scale from business non-technical aspects to IT technical side. And for me, data scientist would be somewhere in the middle, having technical skills, machine learning skills, and at the same time, understanding business context, understanding how to get value with the skills. Data analyst, for example, would be closer to the business, maybe interpreting data, creating some visualizations, but not necessarily having any machine learning skills. And the engineers would be then on the IT side, like ML engineer would build infrastructure to bring AI products to production. And data engineer would make sure that we have necessary data flows for that.
Okay. In terms of quantity, are there more people of one kind and less of the other?
It all depends on the team, as Henning said. So it depends on the projects the team is working on. It depends on how the team is working, the team members are working together.
I think currently the data science role is getting more attention because it's closely associated with AI. So many people, both from Germany and internationally, want to get into a data science role.
Our university, by the way, claims that data scientist is one of the hottest jobs there is at the moment.
I would say so too, yes. I have to add, in the past, I also thought I wanted to be a data scientist. And then I started as the data engineer, so the role that takes the models from the data scientist and tries to bring it to production, which involves more software engineering and, in my case, also infrastructure management. And I really love this role, and now I wouldn't change it with data scientists because it's less data analysis and more of the software engineering part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's try to create some pictures for our listeners. Can you give us a current challenge that you're facing and how do you deal with it? What's the expectation of the business side or of the management? What are you struggling with at the moment? Any example you could give us?
A concrete example are security findings, for example, because it's a topic that gets more and more attention. Of course, it's very important. And daily news security vulnerabilities occur, and we have to manage them. And we have to manage them efficiently so that we fix them fast, but also without disturbing our daily processes and business. And that is a huge challenge because we don't want to destroy the hard work of the data scientist and break the AI models, but we also need to fix security. And that is a topic that is does nothing have to do with AI directly. It's a software engineering topic, but because AI is software, you always have to consider those things as well.
Tatjana, anything to add or another example?
For me, the main challenges are mainly related to understanding business context. I think it's quite often underestimated how important it is. A lot of people are using AI, a lot of people know what AI is and can apply it. But when it comes to some concrete applications, integrating AI models into business processes, here when it comes to the real challenges, you have to understand how everything works and how AI can really support it. So that's the most interesting part for me.
And is there a concrete example you could give us where AI is already implemented and helping?
For example, automating maintenance requests that our dealers are sending to us when they want to, for example, exchange oil on a car or exchange some other components. Yeah, they are now supported or by the processing of such requests is supported by AI or fully done by AI.
Oh, okay. Let's broaden the scope a bit. We talked about AI already, and we've safely established that these data out there that we're producing, continuously producing millions and billions of data every day. What do you see as future trends in further development of AI? Where are we heading?
I think generative AI, my favorite topic, has boosted acceptance of AI. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of people from the former non-AI world are now using it actively daily for new applications. And
would you say that they understand it too? I mean, I give it to you that many, you know, students, for example, I'd say 99% of the students use ChatGPT to produce their job application materials. Sometimes I get the notion that they interpret wrong stuff or they overestimate the capabilities of AI.
Yeah, this is, of course, a challenge. So on one hand, I don't think you have to understand how exactly AI works as long as you can successfully apply it. On the other hand, you also have to understand how to successfully apply it, of course. So there is always a balance, a trade-off between those two.
Future trends.
As a lazy person, I hope that AI can automate as much parts of my job as possible. I mean, for code generation and developing, AI is strong, but as you said before, it still makes a lot of errors, and especially in niche topics, it's not very good. But yeah, we will.
Such as what are niche topics?
For example, infrastructure, where you have servers that relate to one another, but they do not appear in the same coding file, for example. Mm-hmm. It's hard for AI to get the context for this, for example. Might get better, but it's currently a challenge where the human is still needed. And Tatjana said before, I think requirements engineering becomes even more important because you need to understand what you need and what you want as a business or as a person to tell AI what you need and want. Because if you just Like Henry Ford said, if you ask the people what they want faster horses, and then he built a car. So the people didn't know exactly what they want. And if you get good at requirements engineering, you can also leverage AI more.
Is, you know, I'm a complete dummy and ignorant when it comes to these technical things, but is there a difference between requirements engineering and prompting engineering? Or is this closely related?
I'm not sure. Maybe Tatiana is more the expert because it's generative AI.
Prompting engineering is how efficiently to tell large language models, for instance, how to do the job. So being able to precisely formulate what exactly your expectations are. Requirement engineering is actually also going this direction, but not necessarily only in the context of generative AI. Requirement engineering is also something that belongs to so-called traditional software engineering, where you have to translate customer requirements into technical requirements, explaining what the expectations are.
Thank you. And we're heading towards significantly increasing the capabilities of AI. Where are limits? I think Henning mentioned earlier, you know, and everything hands-on, maybe everything having to do with emotions or showing empathy is something that's not likely going to be replaced by AI. Or where are the limits? The sky is the limit.
Probably. I cannot say for sure, but I can only tell my opinion. I think AI is developing fast, but in the end, it's just a tool. And it depends on how you use it. And if you use it in a smart and efficient way, you can achieve a lot. But you still have the technical limitations, of course, like the context window. AI can remember just so much of what you tell it, and you have a lot of computational power needed to do all the stuff you want to do. So right now we are in a hype where everybody thinks it grows infinitely, and there will come a time where the focus will be more on efficiency and, okay, how much does it cost and so on.
The cost factor is actually interesting, right? There's energy need involved, for example, storage and so forth. And that may set limits. Efficiency is more the direction in which we're heading. Tatiana, is it something you would like to add?
At this point in time, we are actually not talking about fully autonomous AI systems, like not Skynet from Terminator, but about
systems. I would have other examples for you. It's interesting that you mentioned a movie.
But about AI supporting people, maybe automating some tasks. So you have mentioned empathy. I think it's not there yet, but the models can already imitate it quite nicely. I don't know if you have tried to ask, for example, ChatGPT for some psychological support.
Not yet, no. I have a dear wife that I usually share.
It's a popular application nowadays. That's why I'm mentioning it.
Okay.
Because these models can really sometimes find the proper words that make people happy.
Interesting. Yeah, I said, you know, interesting that you mentioned movies. When I did some research on the topic, I instantly came across numerous movies that address this issue. It's usually dystopian movies, actually. And the earliest one would be 2001, A Space Odyssey. I don't know if you ever have heard of it. It's quite old. It's from the 60s, actually. But then there's younger movies such as AI by Steven Spielberg and Elysium, starring Matt Damon and Jodie Foster. And in all of these movies, you have these situations where AI is taking over and developing emotions and struggling with that. So obviously, that's a nightmarish outlook, so to speak. Do you guys have the feeling that at some stage you might be replaced by AI, that your job roles become outdated?
I think the labor market is changing nowadays, but in most of the cases, it's about working differently, about transforming existing jobs and not replacing people. There is a popular phrase that people using AI will be replaced by people not using AI, and I absolutely support that. I think this will apply for many jobs.
People using AI will be replaced by people not using AI?
Exactly.
Wow, so I need an explanation. That sounds like stepping backwards.
I think it's a step forward. I'm quite positive about it. So even for our job, for data science, it will be different. If we take a look at the programming part, for example, it's already different with the support of coding agent, coding assistants, AI-based. It's not working the way as it used to before, but this business context that I have mentioned several times today will be still hard for the machines to understand. So I think our job will not be replaced, but it might even get more popular with this rise of AI, with these new applications that are there now.
Henning, your take on it?
Yeah, I don't think that I will replace the job of a developer or engineer. It can program really good, and it's makes me save time. That's really good. So I can, in the same time, I get more things done. So that's great. It's probably more difficult for entry-level jobs like a junior developer to get started, because AI can take over those parts pretty well. But when we are looking at senior-level engineers, scientists, and so on, they have a good intuition how good systems should look like and so on. And AI can support that definitely, but probably not replace it. In the end, we are building software for humans, so we need to meet these human needs. Mm-hmm. And as Tatiana said, requirements engineering will grow in importance even more.
Okay. What do you think of ideas such as from Elon Musk to actually implant chips into humans and blend artificial intelligence and mankind? Is there a future to that? Is that blurring the two spheres?
I think Elon Musk is an expert in promising things that don't come as he promised it. It might help for medical approaches, I think, some diseases. So that's really good, because it helps people. I do not believe, but it's a personal belief, that we get kind of cyborgs and so on, maybe hundreds of years in the future. But yeah, who can look that far in the future?
I mean, some blurring the lines is already taking place in terms of customer service, I suppose. I guess, I don't know, Volkswagen Financial is that far advanced. But when I call up a service line, you know, I might not even be talking to a human anymore, right? And I'm not noticing, because, as Tatiana said earlier, the voice is so similar to a human's voice already. And the possibilities to interact and react are so far advanced. So there are some blurring of two spheres is already happening. Is your company using that already? Tatiana said a loss.
We are working in this direction.
Okay.
Of course, we are, as a financial services institution, are working a lot with customers. And of course, we want to keep up to date with the latest technologies, with generative AI. And this is one of the most important fields, but that we are working on, also finding practical applications for that.
I don't know if you guys are aware of this test scenario, but I think it was Google that had AI arranged for, I think it was a haircutter's appointment. Henning's already nodding.
It was a few years ago, before ChatGPT, and there was quite a backlash because businesses didn't appreciate the non-personal contact, and because this kind of automation also opens the world for scammers and exploitation. In the US, for example, there are businesses scraping up all the reservations for Fridays and Saturdays in restaurants and then selling them to the people that want them.
Okay. So
when building these automated systems, you always have to keep bad actors in mind. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think these dystopian movies, although they paint a quite bad picture, help us understand what would be one of the worst case scenarios and prepare for that or to avoid that. So I think they actually help in making AI better for all of us.
Mm-hmm. The fun thing about it was, I believe, that it exposed the limits, because, you know, AI called this one hairdresser And this conversation evolved and up to the point where the hairdresser said, I'm not taking appointments over the phone, just come by. and AI was really trying to find a workaround, but the hairdresser just insisted, no, just stop by. So in the end, it didn't work. But
AI started putting its clothes on.
Yep. Well, you guys, I'm looking at the watch. We're nearing the end of this episode already, but I couldn't have you leave without leaving some tips for our prospective students and our current students in particular. As you know, we have a number of study programs at TU Braunschweig already in place where students are dealing with AI, with big data, study programs such as artificial intelligence and molecular sciences, or digital communication and media technologies, or data science, as we mentioned earlier. So for all these people that are currently studying it or looking into these study options, when they prepare for future professional life, what are your tips?
I would have two tips. First of all, I think our field is changing that fast. The data science field is changing that fast that the university studies can give you a solid background. But if you really want to keep up to date, I would suggest to check on online resources that are freely available now, like newsletters, courses. I personally
any particular tips where to look or what sources to avail yourself of?
I personally find the concept of microlearning quite attractive. There are newsletters. There are, for example, short courses from deep learning AI that take...
Which newsletters? Can you give us some names or titles?
Not that spontaneously, okay. But speaking of the courses, as I said, for example, deep learning AI is one of the most famous ones, or developers of large language models, for instance, they also offer courses for their particular models, like Anthropic. The short courses take 1-2 hours, so you can even speed them up. They don't take that much time, and at the same time, they will help you to keep up to date with the latest developments. Still, in my perspective, it's very important to also get your hands dirty, and not only to get the theory, but understand how to apply it. So I would suggest getting practical experience, maybe look for hackathons, because hackathons often offer real-life problems to solve. Or maybe look around, search for an internship, because lots of companies are offering that. So something that is practical and something you can enjoy.
Very good. Yeah, internships, working student positions as well.
Yeah.
I know that in those study programs that I mentioned are overwhelmingly populated by international students, and those students in particular usually have a need to finance their studies in part, and so working student positions are usually heavily sought after. Okay. Henning, would you like to chime in?
Yes. So, of course, we already heard it in this podcast, often practical work and get your hands dirty. As Tatjana said, it's quite important. I also have a high-level tip, like choose something where you have passion, what you have passion for. So it makes it easier for you to endure the non-pleasant aspects of your daily work. And also...
Which would be? Unpleasant?
Developers often complain about documentation, for example, which is important, of course, but it's most programmers want to just hack and dive in and so on. So if you have something that you are passionate about, it helps you endure those non-enjoyable tasks, and also helps you adapt a growth and learning mindset, so you are always up to the latest tech in the industry and so on. And I have a book recommendation, The Pragmatic Programmer. This is probably more for the software-oriented people, but...
Who's it by? Who?
I don't know the author.
Pragmatic Programmer.
Pragmatic Programmer.
You'll have to Google it.
Yeah, I think it is one of the first Google results. And even as a non-programmer, as a data scientist, working closely with programmers, I think it helps producing better quality of work in the end. And one other concrete tip is learn Git and SQL, because it always helps.
Very, very straight to the point. Okay. Maybe an add-on question. When you think of personal traits or soft skills, what would you say would be the 2 or 3 traits or competencies that are most sought after? Tatjana's already nodding, something in mind.
Being able to communicate with people, like understanding their needs. This mm-hmm. is something we have mentioned several times today, but also being able communicating with AI mm-hmm. and understanding how to get the benefits out of it, like prompt engineering, how to write proper prompts. That's an easy example. Yeah, I believe that's a key to success. So communication.
Okay.
I would double down and say communication in the work life is definitely a non-negotiable skill.
And often underestimated, right?
Yes, definitely.
Also, we're all good communicators.
Also, the inter-human problems and challenges that arise, you always have the technical aspect in mind and you forget that you are working with humans and that problems arise there, and being aware of those problems and be able to solve it, it really helps a lot. And also endurance, I would say, to if you have a problem, relentlessly follow it until you solve the problem.
Very good. Where do you get these kinds of skills when you study?
Experience.
I mean, for communication, be open-minded and work with your colleagues. I mean, most students, I think, don't like group work.
Yeah,
but it's... It's a focal point for these kinds of challenges. So
maybe joining student clubs, for example, or becoming a student representative, you know, that.
For example, learning by doing.
Yep. Okay. Well, you guys, we're at the end of this episode. I think we can establish that digitalization and artificial intelligence is a shaping trend of today's world, and it is here to stay. We will not cease to produce data day in, day out, many of them. So we might as well try to make some sense of the technology we created, and that's what we need you guys for, right? So it's a matter of detecting patterns, I would say, and getting insights, as you said earlier, understand the possible implications at the same time, and possibly also seeing the limits. So off you go, right? Henning came up with the title of this episode, Working Inside the Engine Room of AI. So back to the engine room it is for you two. Thanks. It was a pleasure having you. Take good care. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Das war All Lost in the Supermarket. Gespräch mit TU Braunschweig Alumni und Arbeitgebern zum Arbeitsmarkt jetzt und in der Zukunft. Mein Name ist Knut Alborn, Mitarbeiter der Servicestelle Alumni und Career. Wenn es euch gefallen hat, unbedingt wieder reinhören. Wir produzieren ständig neue Folgen und auch gerne weitererzählen unter euren Freunden und Kommilitonen, denn wir sind ein Netzwerk, eine Community, eine TU Braunschweig.